From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. There are more senior citizens every year, and more are victims of elder abuse. Last year, the state investigated 6,300 cases. The abuse can be financial, physical, sexual, emotional, or just neglect. We talked to Valerie Colmore of Adult Protective Services at the Maryland Department of Human Resources, and Nancy Aiken, Executive Director of the Domestic Violence Resource, HANA, about who commits elder abuse, who should report it, and how, and what might prevent it, starting with wider awareness. Nancy Aiken.
If we could open our minds and our hearts to the fact that older adults are abused, then I think we start to tap into the piece of us that wants social justice and doesn't want older people to be harmed.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. We're talking this morning about a tough subject, elder abuse. Abuse isn't always obvious, and it can take many forms, such as financial, emotional, physical, or simply neglect. There are indications society is more aware of elder abuse, but at the same time, the number of victims is growing. Last year, investigations conducted in Maryland involving seniors climbed to more than 6,300, a steady increase from the previous 3 years. Some of the channels available to report abuse have been streamlined. In some cases, a whistleblower can now stay anonymous. More people in an older person's life, like medical and dental professionals and financial institutions, now have a legal duty to report signs of abuse. But the number of seniors is also growing. As the U.S. population ages, more than 10,000 people turn 65 each day, so the situation is ripe for the number of victims of elder abuse to grow. With us to talk about some of the realities of elder abuse and resources to address and prevent it is Valerie Colmore, Program Specialist for APS, the Adult Protective Services Program at the Maryland Department of Human Resources. Welcome, Valerie.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you for being here with us. Also with us is Nancy Aiken, Executive Director at HANA, a resource for victims of domestic violence that also operates a special effort called SAFE, or Stop Abuse of Elders. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you, Sheila.
Valerie, set the scene for us. How or why does elder abuse happen?
We have seniors that are elder adults that are isolated, that are lonely, that are maybe very trusting of individuals that could be in a position of trust, where it could be a paid caregiver or an unpaid caregiver. Lots of times our elders are in situations where they're not independent. They may not be seeking help from anyone. And things could be going on with them that maybe outside neighbors or friends or relatives or individuals that they have a social connection with are not aware of.
I'm trying to understand the impulse behind it. I mean, is it almost always somebody seeking gain? Is it frustration? Is it more emotional or more calculating?
It could be all of those. It could be someone seeking gain financially to exploit a senior that has money, such as their Social Security, their pensions, property. It could be someone that finds that a senior is vulnerable if they're caring for them and they're in a vulnerable situation where they're unable to protect themselves. It could be a situation, an opportunity just to know that, you know, they have a trusted relationship with someone. In certain instances, it could be someone, maybe a grandchild. It could be a family member. Some situations where there's financial exploitation or financial abuse, some family members are not willing to wait for the inheritance, and they feel they want their inheritance now. And so they take efforts, they take measures to deplete the elder's bank accounts, stocks and bonds, not to provide for their care, which is in a position where they should be providing for their care at that age, not taking advantage of them.
Nancy, is this in line with what HANA sees?
Yes, it's SAFE. We see the gamut between financial exploitation, but all the way to really serious physical and sexual abuse of seniors. So it's SAFE. We focus mostly on those cases that Valerie mentioned of abuse by family members, and that is financial exploitation, physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse.
Nancy, CHANA is a domestic violence resource in the community, and you have a program, though, that focuses on seniors. Why does this population warrant a special program?
The abuse of older adults is very different than the traditional domestic violence or sexual abuse populations that we have dealt with. With the domestic violence cases, often the victim services are focused on a younger person who is going to extract themselves from their living situation and can rebuild their life, both financially, emotionally, and through different and new relationships. That's not true for an older person. For an older person who's being abused, the abuse has to stop, but they're not in a position to recoup the financial losses the way a younger person might be. Services are not geared for a 78-year-old. If the older adult needs to be in a shelter, they're not being served well by a dormitory-style shelter with 84 women and children in it. So all of those needs really prompted us to look at the older domestic violence population differently. And then once we started doing that, we realized there was a wider range of elder abuse. We started seeing elders who were sexually abused, others who were being emotionally abused, and we had to just step back and really craft a whole response to that.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Nancy Aiken, Executive Director at CHANA, and Valerie Colmore, Program Specialist for Maryland Adult Protective Services, APS. Valerie, how do instances of elder abuse come to your attention?
The reports can come in either through our local Department of Social Services. We have 24 jurisdictions, including one in Baltimore City. They can come make a call into the local department if they have the information, and we do have that information on our website. And we also have a statewide adult abuse hotline number as well that citizens can call in and make a report on a vulnerable elder.
We'll put that on the record page at WIPR.org. So, Valerie, what is the chain of events when your department is alerted?
When a call comes to the attention of the local Office of Department of Social Services, the Adult Protective Services Program, that call is then screened by an administrator or supervisor for the Adult Protective Services Program. The investigation or the alleged allegation is looked at to see if it warrants an investigation through our Adult Protective Services Program and if it meets our criteria for investigation. And once we decide that it does, it is assigned to an Adult Protective Services staff person or investigative social worker to determine if the allegations are true that were reported.
So take us a little bit inside some of what you just described. I mean, what are the criteria? What are your investigators looking for in that very first screening? What is it that they need to understand to decide whether to move forward with the case?
We're looking for if the allegation is reported, if it actually meets our standard of investigation. And what that is, we have a definition of vulnerable adult is an adult 18 years or over, and this does include elder adults as well, 65 and over, if he or she lacks the capacity to make the decisions for their daily living needs.
And we haven't really talked about where those initial, the reports that you're getting from local social service offices, how do they tend to hear about situations?
The call can come in either through a telephone call. We may have someone that comes into the actual local Department of Social Service office and makes the report in person. It can come in through an email. It can come in through any person from the community, a citizen, from a healthcare professional, hospital, could come in from an attorney, could come in from one of our other community partners that we work with. And the types of report that we investigate through the Adult Protective Services Program is adult abuse, neglect by others, exploitation, which also includes financial exploitation, and self-neglect.
Nancy, how does this compare to what your efforts are?
As Valerie mentioned, APS works with those who lack capacity to make decisions. So there are many, many cases of abuse that happen to people because of a trusted relationship when that person doesn't lack capacity to make decisions. And that is where SAFE comes in for all the cases that APS cannot help with because people exist within abusive relationships for a number of reasons, because of coercive control, because they are in a situation that they have been put in by the abusive partner or the abusive other that makes them have to make a decision to stay or leave because staying might be the less dangerous of those situations. Very similar to domestic violence. Domestic violence victims stay because leaving is often more dangerous, and that is true for elder abuse as well, or because they don't have anywhere to go, or they don't have access to resources, or aren't knowledgeable about resources, about how they can help stop the abuse. So that's where we come in. The first thing we do is evaluate a case to see whether or not the person has capacity. And if they don't have capacity, we will call APS. But oftentimes, APS workers are limited by their mandate. And so they've been wonderful partners with us in cases where if it doesn't meet the criteria, then that might be something that we could help with at SAFE.
I mean, are there times when you see a problem, but it doesn't fit a category and no action can be taken?
There are circumstances when that does occur within the Adult Protective Services Program. Our program seeks the cooperation from the vulnerable elder as much as possible. But we do have situations where, as Nancy talked about, well, the vulnerable elder may not be willing to cooperate with some of the supportive services or some of the supportive programs that we would like to refer him or her to reduce those risk factors or further them from being further victimized. There could be mental health, behavior health issues. Maybe the individual is not to that point mentally or behavior that they can actually consent or to understand that they do need help. They are in a vulnerable situation or that they're even being victimized. And so in that situation where we find that APS is not able to secure the cooperation from the vulnerable elder or they're not able to give that consent to be able to do that, we may refer to SAFE to see if their services would be more in line in assisting the vulnerable elder further.
Are there situations where the abuser is another senior?
Yes. And that has occurred in some situations. As Nancy mentioned with her organization working with domestic violence, we do receive sometimes referrals where there is a spouse-on-spouse domestic violence abuse. And if that does occur, what we do is we partner with our local domestic violence organizations and partners to refer that case to them to follow up for more extensive services and support.
It hasn't come up yet in this conversation where the charges are filed. I mean, does elder abuse trigger criminal charges?
It certainly can, and emotional abuse is harder to provide a criminal and law enforcement resource for that or response to that. But certainly in physical, sexual, and financial exploitation, most of the crimes against older adults in those categories would warrant a criminal response. But the victim is not always willing to go through with that. For example, we had a woman who was being victimized really by all of her grandchildren. And
victimized in what way?
She had lost the deed to her home through fraud that they had taken a settlement that she had had from her husband on an asbestos case. They had taken all of her funds out of her name except for the one monthly check that came in. And basically they had moved into her house where doing drugs and other illegal activity and keeping her in a small bedroom. And when we found her, she was not willing to press charges because, in her words, she had worked hard all her life to keep those kids out of jail and she wasn't going to be the reason they were going to jail. So she chose to walk away from that home and with her limited resources, find a pretty modest assisted living situation to live out the rest of her life. And that's somebody who had capacity. She was able to make that decision, but she was still being abused. And that's where SAFE can help, to walk her through that, to provide certain options, and then to support her in whatever decision she made. We don't make decisions for our clients, but help them evaluate whether or not a criminal justice option exists for them. Sometimes there's a civil litigation issue that we can help them with, and sometimes it's just social, psychological, and emotional support.
Valerie, do state's attorney's offices tend to have dedicated staff to deal with elder abuse cases?
Yes, and also to piggyback on what Nancy has just shared, during the course of an investigation for Adult Protective Services, if we find during the course of our investigation that criminal intent has occurred, we will make a referral to our local law enforcement office to follow up on that allegation, and in turn, the local law enforcement officers, they will contact the state's attorney's office if they feel that a crime has been committed and what would be the next step. And as Nancy spoke, you do have sometimes where a crime has been committed, but some of our vulnerable elders are not willing to testify against their alleged family member, maltreater, against the perpetrator, against that crime, because of the sense that they don't want to be left alone. They don't want to be isolated. They are very dependent upon that individual for care, housing, and for their everyday living needs. And so it can become difficult for some of our state's attorney's office to actually prosecute a case where either civil or criminal prosecution is warranted. And we do have in some of our jurisdictions, there are dedicated state's attorney's office that do have separate attorney investigative staff that work with those elder abuse cases across the state.
Then, Nancy, what happens when in cases when the accused elder abuser is also an elder?
That situation is difficult for courts, both criminal and civil, because they're not used to perpetrators being elderly, being codependent on the victims. And so there's no clear-cut answer for courts. We've certainly seen protective orders where the judge looks to those in the courtroom to say, we have to figure out another solution. Vacating the home, kicking this individual out of his house with nowhere to go is not an acceptable response. How are we going to handle this as a community? And I think that is a situation we will be looking at more and more as elder abuse grows with a growing older population.
I understand that you are either applying for or do you already have a grant for an interdisciplinary team?
We have applied through the Department of Justice to bring together everybody in Baltimore. The state's attorney's office is signed on, the Baltimore City Police Department, the Baltimore City Health Department, and HANA have all joined forces to ask for money so that we can all go to trainings, national trainings on best practices in elder abuse and bring that back to Baltimore. And we will find out in September whether or not we've received that grant.
Good luck with that. We need to take a pause here. Nancy Aiken of HANA and Valerie Colmore from the Maryland Department of Human Resources are here. We're talking about elder abuse. And when we're back, we'll talk about resources that can help with the prevention of elder abuse. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. We're talking about elder abuse, resources, and prevention. World Elder Abuse Awareness Day is Thursday, and tomorrow morning, Baltimore's Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Wen will speak at an event organized by one of our guests, Nancy Aiken, Executive Director of HANA. Also with us is Valerie Colmore, Program Specialist for the Adult Protective Services Program at the Maryland Department of Human Resources. Valerie, is elder abuse typically investigated more often within one population or economic strata?
No. It covers all populations, all economic levels. It really has no particular place. I mean, it can happen to those that are in low-income situations or those that are very wealthy and well-off.
If it so often happens in such deep secret that even people around may not be aware, how can it be prevented?
It can be prevented if those that are in the community who we see as our eyes and ears report what they see. If they suspect that elder adult abuse is occurring, we encourage them to report it. Even if they're not sure, if you go with your gut, and if something in that situation involving that vulnerable elder just doesn't feel like, report it into Adult Protective Services or to your local law enforcement police office. Or you can also report it to the long-term care ombudsman through the area agency on agency's offices locally. That information needs to be reported, because if it's not reported, how do we know to be able to address it and to seek to remedy those risk factors that are causing the continued victimization of our elder adults?
But I'm troubled, and I want to ask either one of you, this idea of, even if you're not sure, report. My instinct would be, if I think a child is being abused, I would screw up my courage and step in. But with an adult, I feel like I'm interfering. I feel like, that family may know what's going on. I mean, where do I come off saying, no, I've got, even if I'm not sure, I need to step in?
I think that is a dilemma for people. And so if you're not ready to call in a report, I would say call SAFE. We will talk you through that. We certainly receive many calls from neighbors, from family members, from bank tellers, from dry cleaning attendants, from just people who say...
Dry cleaning attendants.
We had a case once where the dry cleaner wouldn't clean the clothes because there was so much blood on it. He was concerned that something had happened to his customer. And he was right.
Wow.
So when you see that, it's sometimes just something in isolation. So to call us, we will even take those calls anonymously and just help you go through the situation. What are you seeing? What's your gut telling you? And then our what we'll often suggest is go ahead and make the call, because you don't know. You might be the fourth person calling for this person. For this potential victim, you might have seen one small piece, but three other people might have seen a small piece in the last month, and they might have called APS, and APS might not have enough to reach that criteria, and your call might be the one that tips that balance to let them go out and investigate. So we can sometimes help by talking to one of our advocates or our social workers, help you find the language and help you get over that defensiveness or that lack of certainty and help inspire you to take a chance and try to save a life.
What are the resources Khanna suggests to prevent elder abuse?
I think awareness and education is really what will help us going forward. We need to know what elder abuse is and to confront our own ageism. When I say sexual abuse, my guess is you're not thinking of an older adult. You're thinking of either a child or a younger person, and sexual abuse is happening to elders. Physical abuse. If you see a bruise on an older person, you're going to think that that's because they're older, often. And yet if you saw a bruise on a 24-year-old, you might immediately think perhaps he or she has been hit by a partner. So education, awareness, thinking about people as people and not as an older person. And by that, you know, coming to an event. There are events all over this week for World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. Read an article. Have something at your institution, you know, talking about this issue, whether it's a faith institution or a social institution. Read something about it in a book club and discuss it. If we could open our minds and our hearts to the fact that older adults are abused, then I think we start to tap into that piece of us that wants social justice and doesn't want older people to be harmed. And then we would be motivated to report more, to learn more, to teach mm-hmm. our children, and to keep an eye out on those institutions that we interact with every day about making sure that there's nothing going on that would harm an older person.
For people who actually have a caregiving responsibility, what do you suggest?
Caregiving for an older person is difficult. One of the important things there is to take care of yourself. You cannot be a caregiver without taking good care of yourself. And that piece is a little different with elder abuse than in other forms of abuse. Being aware, again, educating oneself about the impact of caretaking on your own mental health, on your own physical health, trying to provide respite care for yourself, and sharing those responsibilities among family members, even if it's a family member that you might have an issue with. It's not all about you, it's about this older person too, and trying to overcome some of those obstacles and communication, and not to be the hero. You know, many caregivers get into they don't want to be seen as weak themselves, so they believe they can do everything. They love their mom. They love their father. They are going to take care of it, even if it kills them.
And then at some point they snap.
And then sometimes that type of stress has led to some forms of abuse. That's the kind of prevention that can start happening when we are in our 40s, 50s, and 60s. We can start reading about it, preparing ourselves.
And we at the department, we have a respite care services program that provides respite grant hours to an individual that's in a position of caregiving. We also have a Maryland Caregivers Coordinating Council that's also a body of individuals that come together from other organizations that look at what caregiving needs can can be addressed to the caregiver, because we recognize that it can become stress. They can become vulnerable. They may even have their own personal or mental or physical needs themselves, and not able to really care for the vulnerable elder as they once thought they could, and may not be willing, as Nancy said, to reach out, you know, seek assistance, seek help, or even to recognize that I do need help, thinking they can, as Nancy said, can do it all, and really you cannot.
Thank you both for this conversation.
Well, we appreciate your concern about this issue.
Thank you, Sheila, also for inviting us.
Valerie Colmore is Program Specialist for the Adult Protective Services Program at the Maryland Department of Human Resources. Nancy Aiken is Executive Director at the Domestic Violence Resource, CANA, which focuses a special effort on elder abuse. The toll-free state hotline to report elder abuse is 1-800-917-7323. Again, 800-917-7323. And CANA's number is 410-234-0030, 410-234-0030. You can find both numbers at the On the Record page at WYPR.org, as well as information about tomorrow morning's breakfast meeting about elder abuse at the DLA Piper office in North Baltimore. Baltimore Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Wen will speak at that session. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening to On the Record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks!